My name is John Dick, and I'm here with community nutritionist Mary Jane Eason to discuss topics of healthy living, what's going on with environmental issues, and what's going on in our community, as well as other interesting things in this one-hour show. On Wooden Spoons, we recognize that all things are related, and with learning and awareness, we connect the dots and make up our world. Every Friday morning on Wooden Spoons, we speak with guests on today's relevant issues, share nutritious recipes, and explore important topics with perspectives not found in mainstream media. Time right now is 8:01 a.m., and the temperature outside is 7 degrees Celsius. Good morning, Mary Jane.
Good morning, John. How are you this morning?
I'm doing fine. How about you?
Oh, pretty good. Yeah. It seems a little different when I don't come to the station every week.
Right.
And because as you know, Kaylin Spain and Marianne Sorelli we're sharing the program on Wooden Spoons, and their show is called Dialogues Gravel Roads to City Lights. And they're going to be on Wooden Spoons on December the 12th and December 26th. So we're alternating. So it's sort of interesting thing, and it's kind of it's the distance between my coming on and their coming on. It kind of gets me out of a pattern.
Right. It's not every week anymore. It's just maybe some weeks, but yeah.
And I think how it is going to be working out is that I'll probably be we'll be alternating. So it will be 1 week them and 1 week Mary Jane's Cooking School on Wooden Spoons. So, and you managed to be keeping on top of it.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, so for the this morning, I'd like to acknowledge, as we do every morning on Wooden Spoons, we are located on Treaty 1 territory, the traditional land and waters of the Cree, Ojibwe, Ojibwe Cree, Dakota, and Dene people, as well as the birthplace of the Métis Nation and the heart of the Métis homeland. We also acknowledge the Shoal Lake Number 40 First Nation and its territory for our life-giving water. And just to give a bit of a rundown about our program this morning, we have our guest this morning, who is Laura Steinman, a good friend of mine who lives in Chilliwack, B.C. And she, by the way, years ago, Laura used to be... I think she was the tech person on the radio program. I'm not sure, but she used to be with me until she moved to Chilliwack. So that's quite a while ago. So this morning we're going to be I'll be talking to Laura, and after that interview, there's usually some commentary that I'd like to share, and then some nutrition information. So on this note, I am just wondering, are you there, Laura?
I sure am.
Oh, good. I can't see you. It's good to hear your voice. So
I love being back at CKUW and Wooden Spoons. It's home to me.
Well, yes, were you doing the teching, or was I? I can't remember.
I think we soon realized that neither of us was so inclined, and was wonderful and a huge gift when we had someone to help with the teching. But I was your co-host at first, Mary Jane. That was over 20 years ago, so it's been a long time.
Yes, it has. And of course, the technology has changed, and I just can't cope with that anymore. So I'm very appreciative of
me
having
too.
A co-host. So John is a very reliable, faithful co-host on Wooden Spoons. And so
we're just waiting gold.
Yeah. I'm just going to introduce you, Laura, as you initiated and had been a co-host on Wooden Spoons for quite a few years before you moved to Chilliwack and to join your husband, Elder Art Shoffley, who, sadly has deceased, as we all know. I guess that's been a few years ago, hasn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And Bart passed in 2024, almost 2 years.
Okay. And, mm-hmm. Yeah. And Laura was one of the founders of Mary Jane's Cooking School. I got to know Laura through my association with a mentor, Wilhelmina House, who brought us together. And we have remained friends ever since and communicate with each other almost on a daily basis. Laura continues to serve on the board of directors of Mary Jane's Cooking School and remains interested and involved in what is happening at the school. Laura went to the University of Manitoba, where she got her arts degree, and then later she studied theology at the University of Winnipeg, where she got her master's degree. Today, we'll be talking to Laura about some inspirational ideas about justice and reconciliation, sharing circles, the treaty of the four directions, the teaching, of the four directions and our relationship with nature. We will also reminisce on some of the experiences of Mary Jane's Cooking School that we've had and we shared. And today, Laura will be also sharing thoughts about the importance of Christmas and why this is such a special time of year. So maybe, Laura, we had a long discussion about what we'd be talking about this Friday on Wooden Spoons, and it seems that you would like to acknowledge the values and the importance, acknowledge the values that are important to you, and you said you loved being old, and so maybe we could start on that conversation.
I loved what, Mary Jane?
You said you loved being old.
Oh, yes. You know, I always looked forward to being old. I know that sounds strange in the youth-loving culture that we have, but I looked forward to the idea of being wise, and I sort of equated the two. They don't necessarily go together, as we can see in the news cycle, but I always liked the idea of being more serene and more settled and maybe having something to share. And that to me was going to come only when I was older. So now, without giving away too many secrets about age, I'm definitely old and really enjoying it. So the cycle has come full circle in a good way.
And you are also in good health.
Well, today I am. Yesterday I had a cold, but at least that wisdom kicked in that I took good care of myself and got lots of rest and good nourishment. And today I bounced back. So I'm glad to say that. But thank you.
Well, yeah, that you are very you do bounce back from things. Well, and speaking of colds, I have been just distributing some Wee-Kay that I had received, and somebody in our class, in our graduation class that we just finished, she had some problems with her tooth, and she needed a root canal, but she doesn't have the money. I mean, you know, that was a situation that we're in with the high cost of dental care. And so I brought her some Wee-Kay, which I happen to have. I'm not sure. I think Indira must have given it to me because she has sources of it. It's a root. And then we looked it up, and it turns out to be the name is calamus root. And so anyway, I gave it to her to help restore her problem tooth, because I explained to them that when I took it, I was told it was poisonous to swallow, but apparently that's not true, because I just read Laura Reeves' book on wild edibles. And I was swallowing it without any bad effects, but I was sick that one day when we had something going on in the community, a display or something for Food Matters Manitoba. That's ages ago. And I took that route, and I got better right away. So that was...
Well, I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Some of the traditional medicines are really strong, for sure.
Yeah, and it's a root that can be found in certain areas once you know how to find it. So it's a very healing type of thing. It's very bitter, and when you chew it, you get that bitter taste in your mouth, which I like, by the way, and it's very healing. So Wakai, I think it's spelled W-A-K-I. I was spelling it wrong. I'll have to look it up again. I was spelling it W-E-K-E, but I think that was the wrong spelling. But anyway, so, yeah, so I don't know, maybe we could, I just sent you some topics that I thought maybe we could discuss if you wish. And
well, I'm happy to. I'm kind of thinking about putting together my own little memoir, and so I'm gathering scraps of memory together of myself, together with all my husband's journals here, and all of these topics come together for me. So the subject of Wakai was something that my husband used in his ceremonies, but also for healing and health. I'm not ever going to be making the mistake of claiming my own background as Aboriginal, because it wasn't. But the gift of having spent, I just realized that on Boxing Day, it's going to be our 34th anniversary, or it would have been our 34th anniversary. So there was an awful lot of information that I picked up over the years together with him, and he was a wonderful teacher. And so his story intertwines with mine, and my memoir, when I get down to doing it, will include all of these. Maybe I'll get the right spelling for Wakai. I'm not sure about that, but so much of it was phonetic, as we labeled the bottles and the cans that he kept all of his things in. So I'll see if I can find his spelling for Wakai. But it certainly was a useful and helpful healing medicine for sore throats and colds, as I remember. So all of these little bits and pieces are what make our stories, our personal stories, and our stories always intersect with the stories of other people, the ones that are around us. So this is something that is really important to me, the idea of story, of circle, of sharing circle especially. And yeah, that's what I like to share and talk about.
Yeah, so maybe you could, just describe what a sharing circle is, or the protocols around a sharing circle.
Well, my husband always said, as an elder, and he became an elder because he was recognized for his gifts to the community and his membership in his communities. But you don't have to be really an old elder. You don't have to be real old to be an elder, in that sense, because it's your service to the community, your role of in the community, and that really has a lot to do with the values that you have and that you support. So that's what I was kind of bringing together in my own thinking about the sharing circle. Art always said, and I know I've said it before on this show, that he saw the sharing circle as the most sacred of all the ceremonies that he engaged in. And that would be surprising to some people who think in a more hierarchical way. But the sharing circle emphasizes equality, respect, and inclusion. And that's why he held that as the most sacred ceremony, because it does honor the spirit in each person equally. And that opportunity to share our stories is what makes for community and connection. So that's the sharing circle. And of course, you mentioned that I was engaged in studying in the Faculty of Theology at the University of Winnipeg. I think that the name of that faculty has changed now, but when I was there, it was still theology. And I was in there in a program for a master's of arts degree under the topic of justice and peace. So I wasn't studying the structures of churches and that sort of thing. but the concepts of justice and peace. And of course, restorative justice is part of that. So that all has to do with the circle as well. It brings people together to heal what has been broken in their relationship. The circle has been broken for some reason at the community level or in the home level, and we have to repair the circle so we can continue to support our life and our being together. It's a very practical thing as well as a spiritual and theoretical idea. The circle is essential to life, and the healing of it is essential, therefore, too. So, it's more than that. So it's so life-affirming. I remember taking my own mother to one of these sharing circles, and she is not Aboriginal either, but she was in tears at the beauty of being really respected in that circle, something that she hadn't always felt in her own life as a wife and mother and community member. And especially when we get older, sometimes we get kind of forgotten by people, unless we're, and even if we're with our own family. But the life, the affirmation of our equality in the circle is really what makes the sharing circle perfect for peacemaking as well.
And you can, and in the sharing circle, people are given, they might be holding something in their hand, they might be holding a feather, and when they speak, there's no commentary. They have their say, and that's all, excuse me, all respected. So
yes,
it's very effective tool. Excuse me, it's hoarse voice today.
Yeah, it's very important that there usually is someone kind of facilitating the circle, because sometimes things can be stalled or somebody talks to kind of domineer the situation, and we have to be able to move it along so that everyone gets a chance. But I mean, that's basically the idea, that everybody is respected and tells their story in regard to the topic or the issue at hand.
And that's very healing for people, for sure. And then you also were learned about the four directions and what the meaning of that is. Maybe you can comment on that, Laura.
Well, my husband used to when he was no longer going out to work, when he was actually not well, he devoted himself to making a lot of traditional-looking jewelry at home and pendants and that sort of thing that had sort of symbolic significance relating to the earth and to nature or to whatever the people, and also to beauty, to color and that sort of thing. And he made actually about over 1,000 of those pendants, and I know I've given some to the school. But one of the ones that he kept, and I haven't given away, it's a great big circle. Yeah, and it goes around with four different colors: red, white, black, and yellow, in the Ojibwe culture, which he was. The meaning of those four colors relates to the four races of humanity, as he said, the four directions: east, south, west, and north, going in that kind of circle, and from that direction, from east to north and back to east again. And the four directions of our lives, the four segments of our lives from infancy to old age. So those were the four colors and the four directions. And it's a teaching tool for us to explore and share our own personal stories.
This is CKOW 95.9 FM, and our guest today is Laura Steinman, and co-host is John Dick. So you commented on the wisdom of the elder. Do you want to expand on that a little bit?
Well, there's different ways of being wise, I guess, or different ways of sharing whatever wisdom you have. And part of it is with humor. I mean, we don't always have to be pedantic or overbearing or anything like that. One of the things that my husband was especially appreciated for was that he had a fantastic sense of humor. And so he...
Yeah.
Hello?
Yep. I think the mic was turned off for a minute. Continue, Laura. We're talking about the...
My husband's sense of humor was legendary in his circles that he went into, and some of them were not very easygoing circles. Some of them had to do with being in prisons or in conflict situations in the community. The gift of humor has to be seen as one of the wisest and most profound gift that an elder can share, because it puts people more at ease, and it's a way of teaching that people don't find alienating. So there's different ways of being an elder, as you know, Thompson Highway was an incredibly gifted writer, and he had great humor in terms of some of his writing as well. So the methods of teaching and sharing in the circle can be different, and sometimes the use of humor is a gift that the elders share amongst themselves and with the community that really heals a lot of broken relationships as well. So that's just part of being an elder.
And I know that Art did work in the prisons, and he worked with the RCMP, and he did all kinds of things wherever he went. So I remember, he was very, very supportive of the school, and he used to often come to some of our, I remember one time we had a group of African men, and, Art was, he would talk to them, and they called him Uncle, which was a term of endearment, and, That was something that I think that's kind of a universal term that is sometimes used to honor somebody when they call them uncle. At least that's how it was understood.
There's a lot of respect and affection in that term. And, all of the different communities that he participated in at the community level, or even in the prison, sometimes there were people from different countries or different backgrounds that he served as an elder for, even though his primary responsibility was to work with the Aboriginal inmates. People from other countries who were also in prison, especially Muslim people, really appreciated his teachings and asked to be part of the same group, and he never turned anyone away from that. So it was a real gift to be called uncle, and I found that myself too, that the respect that people offer to older people and everyone actually who were from the Aboriginal communities out here or from other communities, Black or Asian, that respect is much more part of their culture in action than we often feel in our own European-based communities. At least that's how it seemed to be more evident to me.
That's true. I agree with you there. And, I got to know Wilhelmina Howes. She was a psychic healer that came from, she lived in Swan River at the time. And I met her at the University of Manitoba. I heard her speak, and I thought, oh, I'd come and visit her. And somehow, and this is through Wilhelmina Howes that I met you, and she got us together. And so I met her at the university. I met her at the university, and then I realized she was coming to the Charterhouse Motel, I guess it was.
Hotel,
and I don't know
actually.
If it's still open now, but anyway, so I decided to see her, And you would have to pay, of course, and she would charge. And then all of a sudden, I was going there. I started going kind of more on a regular basis, and suddenly she wasn't charging me. She was mentoring me. And she got me, and well, somehow we got together. She introduced me to you somehow. Do you recall that, how
yes.
we met?
It's been many years ago. I met Willie in 1979. I may have met her before you. I was introduced to her through a neighbor that was one of my colleagues at work, and she told me that there was a lady coming into the city from Swan River, and she thought that I would be a really good person to meet her because she was she had some spiritual gifts, and she was wanting to see if she could share them to help people, and she thought I was a good candidate to be one of her first clients. So I guess she recognized that I needed help. But anyway, that was Willie when I went to see her at that. I didn't meet her at the Charterhouse. She went there later. I met her at my colleague's home. And that was one of the first places that Willie was working in Winnipeg, trying out her gifts that she knew that she had to help people. But she wasn't sure how well they would be received because some people were uncomfortable with spiritual gifts such as Willie had. So, but I seemed to be a good candidate. So I did. I met Wilhelmina in this lady's house, and it was extraordinary right from the very beginning that she could see all kinds of things in me, issues and things like that that kind of needed addressing. And right from that point on, for the rest of Willie's life, I was in touch with her. And she also was very, very impressed and interested in arts gifts at the same time.
And you were, you had MS. You developed MS before you quit work, I believe. And what I remember Wilhelmina telling you that you would never be in a wheelchair. And that's...
I'm not there yet.
And that's true. You you walk around, you keep moving, you're still mobile. So that was quite an interesting, yes. That was a very prophetic thing to say. Because most people...
Her first healing words to me were when she found out that I had been diagnosed with MS, she just said, walk, walk, walk. And that's what I did. And I really first had MS way back in 1973, to tell you the truth. That's over 50 years ago. I had symptoms then, which were not diagnosed until later. But as I see my neurologist on an annual basis, he still out here is quite amazed. And he says, with all of his formal education, specialized training and all that, the most important, valuable thing he has ever said to me is, walk, walk, walk. The same thing that Willie said to me when I told her about my MS. So she definitely had gifts, and I will always be grateful for them, especially that she brought you and me together, because how it happened was she knew that you were to start a home cooking school, and at the same time you were volunteering in the community at some of the charities, and you were doing some classes at West Broadway Community Ministry on Broadway Avenue there. Is it a street or avenue? I can't remember. But anyway, you needed somebody to help with a cookbook that you were putting together, hopefully. And I had a background in editing, so she thought maybe I could help with that. And that's how it all started out. So we got the cookbook out, and lots of typos in it, unfortunately. There's so much for my proofreading at that point. But that was a real highlight for me, and I've always cherished that memory.
And you know that I only have one of those books left. I don't know where they all went, so I don't want to give it away anymore. But there's some interesting pieces in there, and you know, I think finally we got somebody to do the typing, but there are certain places that it's very, you could tell that it was very homemade.
It's
something to be cherished, actually. Yeah, so we had quite a few experiences at West Broadway, too. It was very unpredictable. I can't remember where I got the food. It must have been from the food bank, and we sort of prepared food for what was there. And we've had quite a few interesting things happen there. I won't name names, but I remember one client. Well, they had the minister, Ted Nimick. He was the minister there, and Aileen Urquhart was his partner. Like, they worked together at the ministry. And Ted Nimick took this one particular person under his wing. They had both been in the army, apparently. And this particular person, he would come to our cooking classes, but he might have had a bad night. One time, I remember he came, he was all covered in blood because he had a fight with somebody with the gangs, and that kind of thing. We had these unexpected events. Do you recall that, Laura?
I don't remember that particular one, but it always was a case, and probably maybe even more so now than then, because that was in the 90s mostly. I think things may have gotten a little bit more dangerous or more upset in the community more recently than now, than it was then. I'm not sure, but yes, there was always stresses, but the important thing was it was a very peaceful environment, and that was negotiated, that was designed, and that was the product of your very peaceful personality. Everyone loved you, Mary Jane.
Oh,
and
Laura, don't
you were
need to say
represented...
that.
No, it's true. I remember. And it was a very, 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 very diverse population there. And
for
yes,
sure.
Some of the people had been in things like that. Apparently Hell's Angels was represented there, not contemporary, but people with backgrounds and in various very difficult backgrounds. They all came together, including people, and this is just a teaching for people who, like certain U.S. presidents, want to get rid of people that they don't like or whatever. Mm-hmm. We had people there from every background, from the Middle East, you know, from northern communities, from everywhere in Europe who had come to Winnipeg to live. It was a real melting pot, or rather a mosaic, I guess you would say, because we all respected one another's background and cultures, and the main thing was through the medium of sharing in preparing and eating and food, wonderful, healthy food. And it was such a teaching that this kind of gift, the gift of cooking, of sharing and preparing food together, was this very sacred activity. It was set in a church. We didn't have any kind of religious downpouring in any of this, but we did recognize and honor the traditions that people had, and we were very grateful that interfaith, ecumenical ministry at West Broadway provided space to have those classes, Mary Jane. It was
yes.
A gift to the whole community.
Well, I appreciated that too, and I know the philosophy was just run by the church, the Anglican United Church, I believe. Maybe three different churches, but what they offered was a welcoming space for the people, and unfortunately, I still get really upset by this, but during COVID, they would not allow, you know, this idea of not having contact at all with each other. The people were so isolated. The poor were the ones that were the most neglected and the most in danger. And one of our participants that we became very close to, he had been in prison for many years. He was a very beautiful person. Very gentle. I'll name him. His name was Kelly. Very gentle person. But it was circumstances in his youth, and then he got into prison and all this. And he told me, he said, you know, he said, isolation is much worse than COVID. And I always remembered what he said. He was in our class, and he had come around. He was really, really doing so well as they were starting to wean him off the many, many medications he was forced to take in order to get his freedom, which was another abuse as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, it was during COVID when we had a nice breakfast. We used to have these breakfasts together, like different people coming together for a breakfast. I don't know how it started, but that was always Adelina Ferreira, if you remember her. She used to always attend. Well, this one time, only Kelly came. And so we made breakfast. Nobody else came. And it was a very, very special time. And we had a long, long visit. And I had this feeling that I would never see him again. And you know, the next week he had died. So I'll always remember that.
It was just, yes, it's...
Yeah.
You had a premonition, I guess.
Yeah, and it was a very special time because, yeah, something happened there. And it was during, you know, when he was also saying the isolation, because of that, you know, he must have taken something and, inadvertently had gotten something that was very harmful. So anyway, they have all these different stories. I don't know if you can want to share any more stories. We had at West Broadway very funny.
There is so much to share. And you know, a Agape table was a very important part of our story as well. And so much has to do with the sharing of food, because Agape provided some of the first, you know, through, I guess, the food bank, but the supplies that we needed to put together, the meals that we prepared, both at West Broadway and later at the school where the Mary Jane's Cooking School was, when we established it as a house, a home-based school in the Wolseley area, or on the edge of the Wolseley area. Yes, it was all of these bits and pieces. This is a gift to me. You're helping me put the idea of my memoir together. And all we can do is share our own stories. But sharing meals, sharing food is a very sacred thing. And that's why at this particular time of year, it gets to be highlighted even more with, you know, the Christmas and the holiday season coming up. So sharing recipes is an important part, too. So I hope you're going to be sharing one today.
Yeah, so maybe we should have a bit of a break and have a song, and we'll get back to you right after the song, Laura.
Thank you. Okay.
I just selected some songs because I couldn't get my emails working last night. So we'll see what comes up here.
Great.
All right, this is Song Sung Blue by Neil Diamond.
Ooh. We'll see what that sounds like.
Song sung blue, everybody knows one. Song sung blue, every garden grows one. Me and you are subject to the blues now and then. Take the blues and make a song, you sing them out again, you sing them out again. song blue, weeping like a willow. Song blue, sleeping on my pillow. Funny thing, but you can sing it with a cry in your voice. Before you know it, get to feeling good. You simply got no choice. Subject to the blues now and then. But when you take the blues and make a song, you sing them out again. Song sung blue, weeping like a willow. Song sung blue, sleeping on my pillow. Sing it with a cry in your voice. Before you know it, start feeling good. You simply got no choice. Song blue. Song
You're listening to Wooden Spoons on CKUW 95.9 FM. Time right now is 8:42 a.m. We are with Mary Jane Eason and Laura Steinman.
Do you have any comment to make to Dawn?
Not at this moment, no.
Okay. So, Laura, do you want to continue?
Well, I really appreciate being able to be with you on this show on at the end of November, going into the Christmas season, and just think about what all that is about, because it's a completion of another cycle, the cycle of the calendar for another year. And as we come together, it's time for celebration and sharing too. So the opportunity to do that on Wooden Spoons is really wonderful, and I really appreciate the invitation. I always think of the idea of love as being the completion of the meaning of life. And for me especially, I appreciate the teachings that I got through the spiritual traditions that I'm part of Christianity, as well as the teaching I got through art and the Aboriginal culture. I think those two come together in a beautiful way as well. I remember going to, for example, the Kateri Mission, I think it was in Winnipeg, and they had the Catholic Church and the Aboriginal spirituality come together in that setting for a beautiful way of sharing and understanding one another. So this is the key to our understanding, and this is the key to our healing. And in the community, I hope that that can happen. I hope that the welcome of refugees and newcomers into Winnipeg especially continues, and that people retain that appreciation for everyone's culture, for everyone's background, and the sharing of our wonderful recipes, treats, ideas, and love of each other. That's my hope for this coming year.
Yes,
and that really happened in Winnipeg.
Yeah, and it's just well, Christmas is coming, and this is time for all kinds of celebrations and events, and a lot of a lot of spending and materialism as well. But I think the friendship is so important, and family, and getting together with others and sharing is something that we need to highlight, and we do try to highlight that during the Christmas season. Yeah,
and that includes sharing music. You know, I just love music. It's such a healer.
Yes.
And having the music on the show really makes a difference, too, so I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I was just thinking of some of the things that, you know, nature is a very important part that we have. I think perhaps in the European mentality, nature has, I mean, especially, I guess, we were colonized by Britain. There's a good show on Prairie Public Television, a series about the revolution of the Americans against the British. It was a good series of filming that was done, and what people went through to get their freedom from the British. It was quite amazing. But when you think of all the types of some of the things that were bequeathed from us from the British, perhaps, or colonization, was perhaps flawed in many ways. And nature has been neglected. Nature has always been seen by maybe perhaps Western powers as something that can be exploited. And I think that is so wrong. Nature is the ground of our being. Nature is God. And I think that churches are starting to recognize that a little bit more. But maybe, Laura, you might like to comment about nature and the place of nature in our lives. And I know that there's, you have the concept of the owl spirit and the eagle spirit and all that. Do you want to talk about that?
Well, of course, these are things that I learned from my husband, Art, as part of Aboriginal culture. And he's an Ojibwe. Different cultures, different Aboriginal cultures make different emphases on these ideas of nature, but we're all part of nature. And the amount that we use to symbolize nature has to do often with our own highest values. And so, for example, as Art taught, the eagle symbolizes truth and love. And in his culture, it was seen as the way of communicating with God, with the highest power, because the eagle flew with the highest. The owl symbolized wisdom, and also represented the spirit guide that takes us into the next reality, into the spirit world when we pass on. It's not something that represents fear or loathing or anything like that, but actually the companionship as we move from this world into the next world. And everyone talks about passing on in our language ordinarily, but it's the idea of that we move from one level of reality to another, perhaps, however we define that. So nature, and through the symbolism of different animals, represents our highest values, the most important aspects of our ability to live together with one another and with the earth. And the mouse represents humility and innocence. And despite its relatively small size, it's a very, very powerful symbol. In fact, Art always taught that every part of nature has the same level of sacredness and power. The flea has as much power as the lion and that sort of thing, because the real power is in spirit energy, and that's the light, the white light that comes through the higher power, through God, to each part of the creation.
So I'm very fond of mice, by the way.
Yeah,
I do. Like, I find them very lovable. They can be a bit of a nuisance in your home, though. I understand that, but yeah, I remember when Art was having his Oh, his sweat knot is not, I'm not talking about sweat lodges so much. We used to have these gatherings in St. Norbert. And
those were sweat lodges.
Sweat lodges. Yeah.
He had a sweat lodge there.
Yeah, and every time that I've been to some of these gatherings, there were always eagles that were flying overhead.
Yes.
All the time. Art had a ceremony, the eagles were there.
Well, I think that it was the same here, as a matter of fact. There's a lot of eagles, of course, out here anyway, and other birds, but it seemed to be the case that when Art was around or when he was doing ceremonies here as well, of course you'd see a lot of eagles. Maybe it's just that we're quieting ourselves down enough to actually notice sometimes what nature is offering to us, because we're always in such a rush. And sometimes in these sacred ceremonies, we actually get an opportunity to center and to really focus on the spiritual rather than the material parts of life. And that's what makes it so sacred. So, we just have to open our eyes and quiet our voices sometimes and see what's there. We're surrounded by nature.
And another
life is nature.
Yes. And another thing that you had attended was a workshop by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross on death and dying. And I believe that was in the United States someplace. And
that was at St. Norbert.
That was at
Villa Maria. Yes.
Yeah, okay. And that's a tremendous book by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. But the thing that was so fascinating, you were telling me that people were coming in line to sign her book. It's an excellent book, by the way. And an Aboriginal person was in front of you and said to Helen Kubler-Ross, "Hello, Chief Seattle." And she recognized that as that's who she was in another life. Do you recall that?
Actually, this happened in Seattle, actually. Elizabeth was, and she always insisted that we call her Elizabeth, not Dr. Kubler-Ross or that sort of thing. I attended two big workshops with her in Winnipeg there. But at that workshop, she recounted how when she was actually came from Switzerland, and she ended up immigrating to the States when she was married there. She was at one point in the Seattle area, and at the beginning of that gathering or at the end of it, I don't remember. She told one member of our group in Winnipeg that this Aboriginal elder, a man, came up to her and said to her, "Hello, Chief Seattle." And of course, if you'd seen Elizabeth, she definitely did not look either Aboriginal or as a man or as any kind of powerful person. She was very, very tiny, very thin. A chain smoker, by the way, at the time.
No kidding.
She was very powerful, but she didn't look powerful, and she didn't look anything like an Aboriginal chief of the early 19th century or late 19th century. I'm not too good on history dates, but no, Elizabeth was really shaken by that recognition by this elder. And of course, I've become aware that some people are gifted with the ability to see who we really are, see things that the rest of us can't see. And Elizabeth accepted that probably was the case, because all of Elizabeth's teachings around death and dying are the same as those teachings of Chief Seattle and the appreciation of nature as well. She was a wonderful teacher, and I think she and Wilhelmina knew one another at another level too. So everything comes full circle.
Well, Laura, you
like
know what?
Like our show.
My goodness, the time has gone, has sort of flown by this morning. Thank you for joining us this morning and sharing all this information. There were so many other things that we could talk about too. Because I remember one time you gave me a car because you felt sorry for me hauling groceries around and going to West Broadway. And I remember one time we were driving and the door was started to fall out of the car.
What do I expect for $500? That's what I paid for it. So it wasn't a huge gift, Mary Jane. I probably was putting your life in danger by even giving you the car.
No, I don't know. But anyway, the door, we had this problem with the car. I think the door was about to fall off and or some kind of stupid thing happened. But somehow we managed to cope with it all, get around it.
We made it through.
Yeah, we made it through. Oh, well, thank you for sharing.
Thank you for having me on.
Okay, Laura, thank you so much. It was nice talking to you this morning.
Thank you. Okay. Bye to you and John and everyone.
See you.
Okay. Well,
bye,
you know,
John.
I'm going to have time to share a little recipe, and my goodness, the time has just flown by this morning. I have a recipe for carrot cashew casserole. I think I shared it before. Next week I'm going to have the one from our fall supper, which was a lentil and walnut loaf, which was really delicious, but I didn't have it today, so I'll bring it next week and share that. But this is a carrot cashew casserole. It's a vegetarian recipe, and it's a very nutritious and delicious. So what you need: two medium onions chopped, two garlic cloves chopped, 1 tablespoon of olive oil, 4 medium carrots grated, 1.5 cups of cashew nuts, 2 cups of whole wheat breadcrumbs, or anything that's substitute gluten-free if you need to, 1 tablespoon of tahini, which is a sesame seeds sauce, a paste, 1.5 teaspoons of caraway seeds, 1 tablespoon of tamari soy sauce, which is a healthy soy sauce rather than these other chemical versions that you can buy. 1/2 lemon juice or 2 tablespoons of red wine vinegar, 5 tablespoons of water, salt, and freshly ground pepper. And so what you do, you preheat the oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit. You sweat the onion and garlic in the oil until soft. In a large bowl, mix all the ingredients and add salt and pepper to taste. The mixture should come together into a mass when pressed. Press firmly into a 6.5 by 3.75 times 3-inch loaf pan. That's a bit of a complicated thing. 6.5 and 3.75 times a 3-inch loaf pan and cover with foil. So you get the picture. You can get a loaf pan and bake for 1 hour. Remove the foil and bake for 10 minutes more. And rest for 10 minutes in the pan before unmolding. And you can serve this loaf with a green salad and a mushroom sauce. So that's the recipe for today. And thank you for listening to Wooden Spoons this morning. And thank you, Laura, for being our guest. And thank you, John, for being our co-host.
For sure. You've been listening to Wooden Spoons on CKUW 95.9 FM. For our podcast, please go to ckuw.ca, type Wooden Spoons in the search bar, and the show will be up in just a few hours. Till next time, this is John Dick and Mary Jane Eason saying bye for now, and thanks for listening.